more.
Wow.
I guess with that, Kathy, we should start the interview, right?
Yes, Paula.
There's going to be a Tomlin party of five soon. You're expecting a little one.
Tomlin party of five. That's right. My third baby girl's coming.
You may know her from Full House or Fuller House as DJ Tanner, Candace Cameron Bure.
How are you? I'm really good.
You're back, and I am so glad. I really feel so called to do this, to champion you through these podcasts, but I need your help to keep it going. So make sure that you subscribe, make sure that you rate the podcast and that you give it a review. And speaking of, I'm reaching into the review bag, this one from Love Starfish One, who also shared that they're a Penn State fan. Couldn't let that one go. They say they're always gleaning nuggets and they're enlightened that so many struggle in similar areas. And then this review from Chi Chip, by the way, these names, these handles, they're fire people. I love it. Chi Chip writes, I learn a little bit more about myself and my struggles knowing that I'm not alone. This gives me a pick-me-up on days that I need to hear something encouraging and inspirational. Thank you, Chi Chip. Thank you, Love Starfish One. And this conversation, I know it's going to pick you up because it's with the chief balloon inflator himself.
What would be like a new groove for me? And then just do that next thing. And I know it'll feel crazy, but do it anyway.
Bob Goff did something really crazy and confounding. He's known as the yippie guy, the chief encourager. He's a best-selling author of Love Does and Dream Big. Loads of you have asked me to have him on the podcast. And here's why we're talking to him today. Because not that long ago, Bob walked into his law firm and quit. He handed the keys over to his law partner. He went home to tell his wife, hey, honey, I just quit. I know we're broke, but I felt called to do it.
Instead of trying to get everybody's approval, instead of waiting for permission, if you're like listening to this, like you already have permission to do so many of the things that you want to do. I have permission to leave my job. I'm capable of being a lawyer, but that doesn't mean I need to be a lawyer. You have lots of capabilities.
You know, sometimes in life, we're called to do things that don't make sense to ourselves, to others. And Bob is going to help us navigate this space. To be honest, I had a really hard time wrapping my mind around what he did. At one point in the conversation, I'm like, Bob, I'm having a panic attack for you because he did it without a financial safety net. It was so risky and some might say it was crazy. But get ready to laugh, get ready to learn. Here's the one and only Bob Goff. Are you at your house in California? Are those surfboards behind you?
Yeah. So I'm in the garage. We live down by the water. And so we just like, this is where I hang out. I've got a little boat at the end of a pier. So oftentimes I'm there, but the signal is stronger here. So I just come into the garage.
This is really great. I like your setup. You've got headphones with a built-in, you look like you're about ready to play Xbox with a gaming headset.
Yes, all I need is some like more hand-eye coordination. This past year I've spent my time between being here at home in California, and then I bought with a buddy that runs a place called Onsite and another friend, Jamie Kern Lima, we bought this old Young Life camp. And we've been fixing it up. It's been so fun.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yes, we bought we got the camp and we fixed that up to make it so it wasn't like junior high kids and Skittles and all that.
Right.
So we just made it into suites. So it was nice. And then we add an equestrian center and we have 25 horses down there and we train other people's racehorses. So we have all these jockeys that walk around. I'm the big man on campus.
So wait, this has nothing to do with the Oaks, which is your retreat center.
Yeah. So there's the retreat center. Then next to that is this couple hundred acre equestrian center. And then around the perimeter of all this, we planted a vineyard. It's actually going in next week.
Yeah. Are we going to turn grapes into wine?
Yeah. Or wine into water. I don't know. but we're going to turn something into something, 60,000 bottles of wine each year. And I haven't had my third glass of wine. I don't like the taste.
Are you serious? You've got this vineyard. You're going to start producing wine. You don't know anything about it. You're not even an oenophile, somebody who loves wine. So why are you dabbling in this area?
I don't know. It just seems so biblical. I just thought it'd be kind of fun. There's five different kinds of grapes. And somebody asked me what they are. I'm like, round? I'm like,
okay. I don't know. Edible?
So these grapes are going in, and they need to be, the rows need to be within 15 degrees of true north. So when the sun passes over from east to west, the grapes on both sides of the trellis get the same amount of sun. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, when you flip at the beach, you want to make sure that, you know, you get equal amounts of sun on your front as opposed to your back.
Yeah, that's
right?
It. So we're just learning so much about the process.
That's great. What's fascinating to me from what I know about you is these hard right, hard left turns are not unusual for you. Like, you're dabbling in the equestrian field, grapes and vineyards, and you don't know a whole lot about it. And, you know, years ago, after 25 years with a law firm, you gave that up, hard right turn, to start writing and speaking. So let's rewind the tape a little bit. Let's go back to that moment where you're like, I've been a seasoned lawyer for 25 years, for 2.5 decades, but I need to go in a different direction. What was the catalyst for that?
Oh, you know, it was a moment. I walked into this, 24th floor of the Washington Mutual Tower in downtown Seattle. And I walked up to the front desk and the receptionist said, "Who are you here to see?" And I'm like, "Oh, actually, that's my name, like right behind you." And I hadn't been in my own office for the larger part of a year because I'd been overseas and doing things. And if I flew into Seattle to do something, I would do it. And then I'd fly home for supper.
What were you doing overseas?
Oh, we started a school first in India. Then we started one in Uganda. Then we started three in Mogadishu, Somalia. We've got one in Iraq. I've got our second one's getting built in Afghanistan right now. So anyway, that's what I do. When I write a book, I just build a school.
Yeah, exactly. And that's part of your Love Does Foundation, which advocates for children in impoverished conflict zones. I know you advocate for them for education and basic human rights. So you get back from this trip, you walk into your firm, you're asked, "Who are you?" And like, "My name's on the wall." And that was the moment where you're like, I need a change.
Oh, that was it. I quit stuff every Thursday. And so without fail, like every Thursday. So nobody will take my calls on Thursdays because I'm like kind of a hoarder. I like accumulate all this stuff, appointments and this is and that's. And so I just like every Thursday, I just get rid of one. I just say like, I'm out. So about 52 a year, I just
52
lose.
Thursdays.
So it was a Thursday. So I got everybody on two floors together in the biggest conference room and I quit.
But Bob, you quit. Like, so it wasn't just, I need to do this. It wasn't spontaneous. This is something that had been brewing for a while.
No. I quit. Yeah. When I
you just quit.
Yeah. Sweet Maria said, like, "How was work?" I said, "Work." She's like, "No." And I took the key off my ring. I gave it to a guy that worked for me for a decade. And I said, "It's all yours. You don't owe me anything."
Wait, so you hadn't even discussed this with Maria?
Oh, heck no. So one of the things that I want us to do is to like decide that we're going to be new creations. And if you're just the way that you've been, you'll never get to the new part. And so I'm just thinking, you know, old Bob, he's on the bus. I want to think like new Bob.
Yeah.
He woke up about 8 or 9 hours ago and full of like thoughts about like this, but also aware of like my own insecurities and like the voices are like, "You're not smart enough. You're not whatever enough. It'll never work." But I really try to just keep track of like how I'm feeling and what I'm doing here. If you want to try to do this exercise I do all the time, you'll probably think I'm nuts. So hold up your finger, like four fingers with your thumb like tucked in.
Okay. Can I use both hands to hold up four fingers?
No, you got to use one. Okay. So with your finger. So this is a guy named Paul talking to his friends. He says, "Whatever is true," touch your like thumb to your pinky.
Okay. So let me explain to everybody who's listening to this what we're doing. We hold up one of your hands and then fold your thumb down. And now we're holding up four fingers.
Yeah.
So the first thing we do is we touch our pinky
to our thumb.
Okay.
Yep. So whatever's true.
Whatever's true.
And the second thing, whatever is noble.
Okay.
That's
so now
your ring finger.
I'm touching my ring finger to my thumb.
Okay. Now our middle fingers, whatever is right.
Whatever is right.
And then your pointer finger, whatever is true.
Pointer finger to the thumb, whatever is true.
Okay. So now let's go back to our pinky. Whatever is lovely.
Lovely.
Whatever is ring finger, admirable.
Admirable.
Whatever is excellent, middle finger.
Excellent.
Whatever is praiseworthy.
Praiseworthy.
Think about those things. So okay. What I do, and it's actually, if you go, it's Philippians 4. Faith isn't for everybody. It's a big deal for me. And so what I've tried to do is when I hear these kind of voices, you're not smart enough, you're not good enough, you're not rich enough, you're not whatever enough, then I try to say, is it true, mm-hmm. right? Is it noble? Is it right? Is it pure? And I usually never get past, is it true? Because it's just like,
it's not true.
No, I'm calling BS on that. Mm-hmm. And so not with like a bunch of attitude, but with a bunch of resolve to say, I'm not going to be who I used to be. Yep. I really have this beautiful idea of who I might become. And of my career ambition, grandpa.
Yeah,
that I want to be a grandpa. There, I just want to be an awesome grandpa.
And you are an awesome grandpa, but you got to help me make this moment make sense, okay? I'm going back to this moment where you gave up your law firm after 25 years. Help me make sense of this. You haven't told your wife. You do it on a whim, right? This isn't something that's been bubbling up. You come back from overseas. Why did you do it?
I just really like that Cortez burn the ships moment. You know, when it famously
you were burning the ships.
Yeah, his like soldiers are trying to decide whether to go home or not. And then Cortez just got the matches out.
It's like, blow it up.
And when the last one sank, I'm sure he thought, like, what's any other questions?
Yeah. What's the reaction from Maria? What's the reaction from your partners?
Yes. Well, the partner that got it for free was stoked.
Yeah.
So that was a good thing. Maria was a little bit uncertain because we had given away all the proceeds of Love Does, and then I was out of work. It wasn't like we had.
What year was this, by the way? Give me some context. What year?
Oh, I bet it was a decade ago.
So you wrote Love Does, which is a New York.
10 years ago.
2012. Yeah. New York Times bestseller. And this happens after you write Love Does.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've already given away the proceeds. Okay. So I'm trying. This is crazy, Bob. This is
crazy. So what we're trying to do is instead of trying to get like everybody's approval, instead of waiting for permission, if you're like listening to this, like you already have permission to do so many of the things that you want to do. I have permission to leave my job. I'm capable of being a lawyer, but that doesn't mean I need to be a lawyer. You have lots of capabilities and some of the problems is if you have lots and lots of capabilities, it can get confusing because the marketplace will tell you that you should do that because your friends will tell you you're so good at art or whatever it is. So what I want to do is just like get my four fingers out, say, is that true? And several things can be true at once. Like I can be a really good lawyer and I could do some stuff overseas. But if something needs to give, I just decided I didn't want to just be a lawyer. I felt like it was great. I like it a lot, but I could actually start trying cases against witch doctors in Uganda who sacrifice children.
Yep.
So I go, that might actually move the needle a little bit.
A little bit. I know you've qualified yourself as a recovering lawyer. I want to go back to what you just said about giving yourself permission to try new things, to be new things, to do new things. Okay, you have to give yourself permission, but how do you know when you're supposed to go for it? Who do you listen to?
I don't think God's going to land a ladybug on your nose. I think he'll drop a piano on you if he wants to get your attention. But so for us, it's just kind of lining up. Is this thing is going to last? Some of the things that become distractions to us, when you really put them under the microscope, they aren't going to last. Mm-hmm. They won't last till the weekend. They won't last past whoever it is you're rooting for in an election. They won't last past whatever. So I'm just completely undistracted by those things. Mm-hmm. I'm just, is it true?
Mm-hmm. So how did God get your attention in that moment when you make this really courageous, bold, what some people might say is a crazy move? How did God get your attention and say, Bob, you need to do this? You don't have your wife's permission yet. You haven't even ran it by her. Nobody really knows about this, but you have to do this.
I just want us to do strong and courageous things. That was like Joshua for all the people that are like, this feels like Sunday school class, and it's not intended to be. I'm not trying to talk anybody into or out of Jesus. But when I read this story about Joshua and he's told like, you're the guy, you're taking over. And he's like, I'm not the guy. That's what I feel like all the time. And I need to call BS on that. I actually can be that guy.
Yeah.
Like I guess you get to decide to be that woman. Yeah, I'd read a article. It was about young girls, and they lost 40% of their confidence by the time they were 14.
Whoa.
And that just chapped me. I think it's just this male-dominated world. And so particularly in some countries where women are thought of differently than in perhaps the extreme versions of that. So I thought, we're just going to start some schools. I'm not waiting for permission, not waiting for an invitation. When we flew into Mogadishu, I knew a total of nobody. And that's rounding up. I just flew in. And I think, in answer to your question, I think instead of living in the middle of comfortable, I want to live on the edge of yikes. Like, I want to, like, just say, maybe people are listening to this and you got a job that just isn't you anymore. It was you when you got it and you for the next year, but like, you're two jobs behind who you've turned into. Quit.
I mean, what if you don't have the financial infrastructure to quit?
Well, I didn't. Like, we were broke.
So you were like, broke.
A good law firm, but I gave it away. Yeah. So I think that idea, you lose the eye of the tiger. Remember when you're scrappy and you're just like out of college and you got nothing? So that kind of scrappiness, I think you could be like 62 and still try to find that within you.
Saying you want to live on the edge of yikes. You want to do strong and courageous things, but sometimes those things sound a little crazy.
I want to live engaged. I want to like think about things that are true and right and noble. And and it just means what's going to happen is that people will look at you a little odd. You won't even understand yourself. So I don't know. How do you deal with misunderstanding, with people misunderstand you?
I just accept that it's going to happen and that I'm not going to be able to please everybody. So I just have to stay true to myself. And if I have a piece about something, I'll do it. It doesn't have to make sense even to myself. I just know. So
I'm with you on that.
So as you can tell, I'm wrapping my mind around all of this. A lot of people will say, well, I need to know what's on the other side in order to do this strong and courageous thing, to live on the edge of yikes. For you, you didn't know what was on the other side. And I think that's an important distinction. You really stepped out in faith. You felt that nudge. You felt that tap on your shoulder. Bob, you need to do this. And you did it, but you didn't know what you were walking into. You just knew you didn't have a big financial bank account. You didn't have anything to really to a soft cushion to land on, but you obeyed. And so what happens after that? When you take this leap of faith, when you come home and you tell Maria, I've given the law firm to my partner, who's really ecstatic about it. We have no money. I don't know what's next. What happens? What happens in the next chapter? Isn't it great? I'm terrified by this, Bob. I mean, I'm having a panic attack for you.
So it's the difference between being invited on a business trip or being invited on a adventure. So I don't think God's invited us on a business trip.
It's good.
Where everything is in this order and all that. And then what'll happen is we got to keep our eyes on our own paper. We got to stop looking at everybody else because I want to build a kingdom. I don't want to build consensus. I want to just like, I've got this big idea. Like we could start a school for girls in Afghanistan where the Taliban won't teach them. And we'll say like, well, here's the deal. We're just doing that. Mm. And it's not me. I'm talking to you from my garage in San Diego. I've got these courageous teachers in Afghanistan that are teaching these girls. It's just stunning to watch their courage and bravery and dedication, love for their country. Mm. I just love that. So you try the next thing. We do this gathering we call Dream Big. And so we'll meet in different parts of the country and people come and they have ambitions and all that. And so I thought when we were in Afghanistan, what if we get 170 leaders from all the different warring provinces together in Kabul. And now Kabul's the most dangerous city on earth right now. And so I said, we sent out invitations to 170 of them. You know how many showed up? 170.
Stop it.
Is that crazy? So we're in Kabul with 170.
Talk about dreaming big.
Oh my gosh. And like puckering big. Like, but that whole idea to just say like, what would happen if people just struck up some friendships? See, I don't have an agenda for you. I don't think you have an agenda for me. I have an agenda for me. My agenda, be available. Mm-hmm. But I don't have an agenda because when love has an agenda, it isn't love anymore. It's a program. And we don't need any more programs. I'm done with programs.
Mm. How did you get involved with Uganda and Mogadishu? How did you get involved with this overseas international work to begin with?
Oh, the craziest thing, this... there's a guy that's always playing pranks on me and I'm playing pranks on him. And I got a call from a guy saying he was the ambassador from Uganda. I'm like, yeah, right. I'm like, Doug. And he said, you need to meet me in New York. And so I'm like, okay. So I get on, almost like on a dare, I get on the plane, I fly to New York, and when I get off the plane, there's a bunch of guys standing at the end of this thing. He didn't ask me to be counsel for Uganda. He asked me if I would be the consul for Uganda. So I'm actually talking to you from San Diego. I'm the consul for Uganda. I'm not the U.S. guy to Uganda. I'm the Ugandan guy to the U.S.
What's your connection to Uganda at that point? Anything?
Yeah. I've been there. I've got to know all the judges. Yeah. I got to know all the people. So making friends while you're making moves.
Even peel back those layers. How did you end up in Uganda and getting so involved in the first place before you're asked to be?
It was Invisible Children.
Okay.
They had started in Uganda and then immediately got in a crack on something. So I went over to help out if I could. And then I thought, well, since I'm here, like, why don't I go to the courthouse? Because that's where the judges are. Mm-hmm. I'm a lawyer. And so there's one judge that had all these guys with machine guns out in front of his office, and there's a treason trial going on and all kinds of stuff that's going on. Lots of crazy in that country. And so I just thought, this is the person that must have all the power. And so I walked past like the guys with the machine guns, and I go in through the door, and there's a woman there. I said, can I see the judge? And she looked up and she said, do you have an appointment? I'm like, I don't, but I've come 18,000 miles. Can I see the judge? Mm. And she said, one moment, please. And she goes in and she pops out. She says, you can see the judge. So I went in, and there's a judge sitting down by this big desk, and I still didn't know who he was, but I knew he must be the judge.
The judge,
Yeah, because it seemed like a big deal going on in front of his office. Turns out he's the chief justice of their Supreme Court.
No way.
And it feels like this Forrest Gump moment where you just, if you don't have an agenda, but you're just available to the things that are in front of you, using a bunch of strategy, it isn't just aimless to say, no, I'm going to quit my law firm because I'm going big on this. There's a 40,000 abducted children. We're going to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And then he and I started talking about kids, and we talked about his grandkids, and we just became friends. When it was time to leave, I'm kind of a hugger before it got creepy to do that. And I gave him a big hug. And he said, this is why I'm men with machine guns, because he's not a hugger.
Yeah.
Fast forward, I invite him to my place, which is Tom Sawyer Island, Disneyland. Wednesday, I teach at Pepperdine Law School, and I always stop on Wednesday on the way up to class on Tom Sawyer Island. So I invite him to my office in Tom Sawyer Island, and we hatched this plan a couple years later about doing all kinds of just beautiful, mischievous things. Mm. And, so where it gets to, whether you're meeting at Starbucks with a neighbor, which is just important work, whether you're doing something kind, don't go across an ocean, go across the street. And to say, so who can I do something? What would be like a new groove for me? And then just do that next thing. And I know it'll feel crazy, but do it anyway.
Mm. Now, I always say, like, you know you're being called to something if you're good at it and you love it. And then other people notice that you're good at it and you love it. For you, leaving the world of law and taking this turn into speaking, obviously you had a best-selling book at that point, but speaking and also the literary space, you knew you were good at it because you have a best-selling book, but did you love it too? And were other people speaking life into that?
I like talking to people. Yeah. It's just so good because it just makes me think of what might connect with somebody. Mm-hmm. You know that scene when you see the light bulb go on?
Yep.
And if you demystify things, like to just say, like, super simple, like just buy a ticket and go. Like that's literally each place I've gone. Like I've just like got the ticket, went, and I just assumed I'd meet some neat people. And sometimes I did, and sometimes I didn't.
You have a lot of courage, and you're very brave. And you like to take risks and do things that don't make sense to other people, and sometimes maybe don't even make sense to yourself.
Yeah, I wonder if stated that differently, I could say maybe I've got a lot of curiosity.
Okay.
And it comes across, it looks like courage, but it's really, I'm just like so curious about what would happen. What if you bring a pie to your neighbor? What if you just do something really nice that's just like outside of you?
Like you said, go across the street. You don't have to go across the ocean.
Yeah. I got a bunch of people that are telling me about how they want to go to the ends of the earth. Mm-hmm. I just want you to go to the end of your street.
Yeah, that's good. Well, because like, if you're faithful with a little, you'll be faithful with a lot. You have to start small, but you dream big by starting by going across the street.
Yeah, I'm right back to this idea of keeping your eyes on your own paper. There's a fascinating young woman that you should get to know, Natalie Decker. She's a NASCAR racer. She started racing stock cars when she was 12. Is that crazy?
That's nuts.
And so now she's like Talladega, Daytona. She's 23 years old now, racing full-on stock cars.
I love that.
And I was asking her about, like, what does it feel like to do all this? And are you looking at the other car? And we were talking about the idea of comparison. And she said, no, Bob, you race the track. You don't race the other guy.
Oh, that is so good.
Race the track. I'm like, oh, girl, that's good.
That is so good. So I like how you redefined my statement that you like to do things that don't make sense. You like to do things that are courageous and bold, but you said it's just you have these curiosities. What do you do when you're faced with fear? Because I know that you're not impervious to fear.
No, I get it. Yeah, there've been a couple times where it's felt a little anxious. Mm-hmm. What we do is just like kind of the next thing. Every organization I tried to join had enough common sense to say no. You're like, oh, heck no.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll just make my own.
Yeah, I'll do it myself. I love that. You talk in your book, your latest book, Dream Big, about our big dreams and dreaming big. And you say everyone has a big ambition and you're really trying to get people to uncover their big ambition. But what's the first thing that you need to do in order to dream big?
Yeah. So you got to figure out, I think, what are some of the voices, some of the things that have been telling you, you could think of that as a limiting belief, the things mm-hmm. that have kept you away from those things. So let's say your parents split up when you were 8 years old. And so what you did is you come up with a story, which is that everybody will eventually leave. Now, it's not true, but you're 8 years old. You don't know how to deal. You don't have the tools.
Right.
So you come up with a story. And then what you do is you make rules to support the story. So the rule is, I'm never going deep with anybody. And now you're 25 and you're not dating anybody, or you date them once and then peace out. And it's because you made the rule, I'm not going deep, because I know there's a story that says everybody's going to leave. And so I don't want that kind of woundedness. Or you're really insecure, like little Bobby Goff. And so what little Bobby Goff decided
little Bobby
to do.
Goff.
Yes, little freckle-faced Bobby. What he did is he thought, if I could just be fun, then if I'm fun and active, then I won't have to stop and think about how insecure I am. Mm-hmm. So then you make a rule, always activity, always fun. And then you say, why isn't when I'm advocating for each of us is to figure out why you're doing what you're doing. Go back to little 8-year old you. This isn't just mind stuff, but just figure out what was the story you made up about your life, and then what did you do with that story?
So go back to the 8-year old version. I was Guppy. My nickname was Fish Eyes because I had incredibly large eyes and a smaller head. I had to grow into my eyes, and I was super insecure. And the only thing that made me feel valued was doing and accomplishing. I think by nature, I am a doer. I'm definitely somebody that likes to roll up their sleeves and go for it. But I think by nurture, my childhood experiences, being bullied, that was the one thing that I gravitated towards because it's the only thing that made me feel better about myself. Right?
Yeah, makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So then you fast forward to big version of you. And if we can see it, then we can understand it. Mm-hmm. Then we can fix it.
Yeah.
But if we're just so busy dealing with our insecurities that we won't just slow down and see, oh, this is little insecure Bobby Goff.
Yep.
And so then what we do is we act silly and then we become a caricature of who we really are.
Yeah, that's good. Right?
So if I'm always the balloon guy, yippee skippy, who cares? Like that is a caricature of who I am. I'm actually a strategist. Underneath a veneer of yippee is a mile of strategy. So we don't really? Say, well, then the plane just showed up. Like, oh, heck no. No World Food Program. Like,
yeah, there's strategy yes. behind the helium.
Totally.
Okay.
So I think if you can wed those together, identify some things, if you have some tendencies that aren't helping you, like your insecurities are getting in the way, you're not going deep with some people. What I love is the idea, the possibility of what would happen if we showed up, limping as we are, knowing our insecurities, but having something, a bigger purpose, that idea of, I'm just really curious about what will happen next. Mm-hmm. What if the angels in heaven, I know God's supposed to know everything that happened, is happening, going to happen, but the angels don't. The angels only know whatever God told them. Like they said, go tell Joseph he's going to be a dad, right, and look at his face. Like, go tell Mary she's going to be a mom and watch her expression. Yeah. So if the angels don't know what's going to happen in your life and in mine, I just imagine them leaning over saying, like, what the heck?
Yeah, what's going to happen next? How does the chief balloon inflator stay so positive? What do you do to fill your tank? Because you're filling everyone else's tank. So how do you stay fueled? How do you stay encouraged?
Yeah, on Fridays, I'll take a part of the day and meet somebody if they want to go for a horse ride. There's some people that had some really big public failures and they just need to not have somebody taking a picture of them, connecting with their kids again or their somebody. So I'll just say, hey, do you want to meet me out there? We'll get a couple really mellow horses and take a lap. I'll spend a lot of time writing. I just love writing down. It's a little bit tedious. I know you've experienced that. But I really like the end product, that we could capture really relatable stories and talk about those. You just got to know, like you did in your book, you just got to know who's in your chair.
That's right.
Like you're self-aware of yourself and then know who's in the other chair. Because I'm not writing books for religious people. I'm not writing books for second-year seminary students. I'm writing books for the guy at the tire store.
The gal
at the tire store. I want to like have people feel like, you're get over here. Just you're included.
Yeah. Do you ever have an off day, a bad day where you're in a bad mood? I do.
Every once in a while, what I'll do, though, is I kind of turtle. So I go like legs, arms, head, tail in the shell. So I try just do full turtle mode. I'm like, whoop. So I try not to let that metastasize because I'm having an off day. So I try to kind of self-isolate a little bit to just say, like, I just need to. And I have somebody that says no for me. Is that awesome?
Yes.
Now that's a luxury. There's a really amazing woman. Her name is Jordan. And so I love saying yes. I love, love, love saying yes. And I hate saying no. And so if there's something that I just can't do, then Jordan will help me jump in because I'm just horrible at saying no.
Yeah.
So she'll jump in to say, oh, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but I love saying yes. That's why I still answer probably 100 phone calls a day.
That's
because I love saying yes.
But you're fueled by that. That's part of who you are. I mean, that's why you have publicized your cell phone number.
Yes, that's awesome. Who's the neighbor I could love? Who's the person that you're married to that needs some reassurance? Who's somebody that is your neighbor, even if they're across an ocean? And to say, how can I just bring it down a notch? And then you don't have to swing at every pitch. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I win arguments for a living, but I don't argue with people.
Yeah.
Like when somebody kind of tries to get in my grill, I'm like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. Which is so funny because, I mean, that's the thing that most lawyers are known for. People tell me I should have been a lawyer because I'm a challenger. On the Enneagram, I'm an 8. So I like to challenge people. But yeah, that's surprising that you just don't want to get into it.
I don't want to be right anymore. Really trying to be a little bit more like Jesus. And it isn't like you have to, it's not binary. You don't have to pick right or Jesus, but you can be both. But I think there's a lot of people that are, they come across as so mean, but really what they are is they just think they're right. And so they're not mean at all. They just are convinced that they're right. And so maybe just appreciating that, like, wow, you really think you're right, even though you're flat wrong. But to just, I don't feel like, I'm not a umpire calling balls and strikes.
Yep.
I'm a base coach. Just run your race.
Yeah, run your race.
Race the track.
Race the track. Race the track. Not everybody else.
Not the other guy.
Okay, we're winding down. I want to be respectful of your time. One question that I have is, there's this emphasis in society on doing, you know, dreaming big. What do you want to do with your life? What's the next best thing? But do you think there's too much of an emphasis placed on doing instead of just being? Because the doing changes. Like, the doing has changed for you so many times. And if you placed your stock, Bob, if you placed your confidence and your identity and your purpose in doing, and this, if you placed it all in the legal space, and then you walk away and you're like, what am I doing now? Who am I? Is there a danger from placing too much of the emphasis on doing instead of just being and finding out who you are. Like, what are the parts of you that don't change?
I think it's a little of both. I have my wedding ring, but I also have a mood ring. Check that out. Like, $4.
You and my 7-year old son have a mood ring.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Sweet Maria just asked me, like, what color is your ring? Because when I go to these places that are far away, we don't talk about where I am. We just talk about how I am. So I call each day and she says, how are you? I'm like, I'm doing good. And she said, well, tell me about color your ring is. I'm like, well, it's a green with some little blue in it.
Does it really work?
Yeah. Well, we don't read a like a manual. She'll just say, what does green with a little blue mean? I go like, that means I'm like, I'm feeling a little bit lonely, but pretty inspired by some of the people that I've met. I feel a little hesitation, but that's just so drowned out by the possibilities.
Mm-hmm. And your mood ring is what color right now?
Oh, it's like kind of green with a little strip of blue in it. So that just means I'm talking to a friend.
Okay.
Yeah, then I'm just
saw,
really safe.
I saw a little black in there. So I'm thinking, is this ominous?
No. That's a good thing.
We're
mostly green. I think it's the reflection.
Okay.
I never take the malaria meds when I go to Africa, like, because I'm like, what are the chances?
Yeah.
And then I got malaria. And so it almost killed me. It's the variety that like eat you. And so, but I didn't die.
When was this?
This was 2 years ago on Thanksgiving weekend. Well, here's the deal. Ever since then, I bet you're fit. So I bet your heart beats like 60 beats a minute. Wouldn't you say like maybe a little less?
No, 50 mine's more.
Like, it's a little bit more.
I'm not. My husband's like 45. He's super fit.
Yeah. Kerchunk.
Yeah.
Kerchunk. Uh-huh. Yeah. So mine has been beating 180 beats a minute.
What?
Ever since then. Is that crazy? Now, I haven't been to medical school, but that's not good. So there's a thing they can do to reset your heart. It's crazy. You got to do this sometime. You go in. I knew it was there, but I was like, it just sounded bad. They stop your heart and start it again. I did this 3 weeks ago.
Is that risky?
Oh my gosh. Well, evidently. But they do it so often. Evidently, the guy didn't look, he seemed pretty chill. I went in, they made me put that little smock that it has no like rear door on it. It's just like, there you are mooning everybody. And the guy walks in with the doctor, I assumed, with a stethoscope around his neck and a name. And I said, well, so have you done this before? And like, what are the chances? Like, is it good? He's like, no big deal. We'll do this. They make you take off your ring because they put so much electricity through you, it'll give you third degree burns.
No way. All the rest of it
burns off. So they just put it's full green mile. They're like, boom. Now this guy, I just told you everything I know. He could have been a painter. His jacket could have said Sherman Williams on it. I don't know anything about him, but I let him stop my heart because I wanted it to be reset that badly. So what if we were to say, and it obviously it worked because here I am, 60 beats a minute.
60 beats just a minute now.
60 beats a minute. And they just like, what if we didn't have a medical thing or a family crisis or a loss of a relationship? What if we just decided that I want to reset my heart? I want to beat more towards the things of the people around me, loving my neighbors, maybe not getting in the grill of really difficult people, maybe realizing I'm one of the difficult people. And if we could do some of that, I think we'd really get that kind of reset that would have us like have a new perspective on our lives. Quit the job, keep the job. And I think what the goal is that you and I would love God and love the people around us.
That's what's most important, right? That's how we should be known.
Takes a restart every once in a while. I'm so stoked about
from
that.
From a Sherwin Williams painter, no less, right? But you're a lawyer. You should be asking, like, this should be the full inquisition. You should be signing waivers. Where have you worked before? What are the chances I might not wake up? You just went for it.
Yes, I remember. I watched Green Mile. It didn't work that great when they didn't put the water in the sponge. So I remember when they said, count backwards. I'm like, put the water in the sponge. I remember hearing them laugh. And then the next thing I knew, I was awake again.
Oh, Bob, you need to market mood rings. Okay,
yes,
the dream big.
They're coming back.
Yes. Like I said, you and my 7-year old son, we just went on vacation and he got a mood ring and he also got a mood necklace.
Yes. So, I love that guy already.
He's a good kid, Landon. I think you guys might have a lot in common. So, Bob, thank you. This has been such a pleasure. And thank you for the reset. Thank you for this reset.
So good being together with you. God bless you.
God bless you.
And for the people that are listening, just find the whimsy. Find something, get super curious about it.
Love
and
it.
Make it a neighbor that you're curious about.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to go to the ends of the earth. You can just go across the street. Thank you, Bob. And tell Maria I say hello, even though I don't know her, but I feel like I know her.
After a year of being in order to be like inside for like the person that doesn't want to be around people, she's like, yes. One more year.
So she is the ultimate introvert. You are like the extra.
Yes, I'm in the airborne division.
You're not extroverted. You're extroverted. That's what you are. Wow.
All right. Well, call anytime.
Thank you, Bob. I know. And anyone that's listening, you can call anytime as well because Bob's number is publicized. So.
All right. So long.
Thank you. God bless. Thanks, Bob. See ya. Yeah. Okay, so maybe you don't need to reset your heart like Bob did or reset your life. But as Bob said, he has people telling him they want to go to the ends of the earth and he just encourages them to go to the end of their street. I want you to tell me your big takeaway. Go to my Instagram page for that. My big takeaway was that litmus test that he runs things by. When he starts talking himself out of something, when he starts to get in his own head, he asks himself these questions. Is it true? Is it noble? Is it right? And he rarely gets past, is it true? Because more times than not, it's not true. And remember, race the track. Don't race the other guy. Don't race the other girl. Race the track. There's only one you. And speaking of you, one of you will be going home with a signed copy of Bob's new best-selling book, Dream Big, as well as his Dream Big Journal, which was just released. To qualify for that, all you have to do is go to my newsletter, paulaferrisofficial.com/subscribe. That's it. And we'll contact you if you have one. Again, I want to stress, it's so important that you have subscribed to this podcast so that you don't miss an episode. And next week, I can't wait. It's one of my nearest and dearest, a fellow Midwestern girl who went for something even though she felt utterly, completely unqualified.
What are you afraid of? Because I'm afraid of the regret.
Yeah.
More than the moment of no.
No more hints about this one. I'm not offering any more hints about this one, but I'm pretty sure you can figure it out. Come on back next week. I'm Paula Ferris, and it is an honor to be on this journey with you.